Good evening. From the beginning of April, we have been studying Tenzo Kyokun, or instructions for the Tenzo. That is a part of this book. Tenzo is a cook in a Zen monastery. I think we had three times, but I have not yet started to talk on the text. But today I'm going to. Let me read the first paragraph of this text, Tenzo Kyokun. It's page 33 of this book, if we have this book. If we have handout, this is the first page. So let me read it. Instructions for the Tenzo, or in Japanese, Tenzo Kyokun, compiled by Monk Dogen at Kannon Dori Kosho Horin Zenji Temple. From the beginning, in Buddha's family, there have been six temple administrators. They are all Buddha's children, and together they carry out Buddha's work. Among them, the Tenzo, chief cook, has the job of taking care of the preparation of food for the community. The Zennen Shingi says, for serving the community, there is the Tenzo. Since ancient times, masters with way-seeking mind, lofty people who had awakened their hearts, were appointed to this job. After all, isn't this the single color of diligently engaging in the way? If you do not have the mind of the way, then all of this hard work is meaningless and not beneficial. The Zennen Shingi says, you must put to work the mind of the way, offering appropriate variety in the food served so that the community can feel satisfied and at ease. In ancient times, such people as Guishan and Dongshan filled this position. For formerly, various great ancestors have worked at this job. Therefore, isn't the Tenzo different from both usual worldly cooks and even the imperial cooks? It says, let me start to talk on the text. The first sentence is, from the beginning in Buddha's family, there have been six temple administrators. Buddha's family means Buddhist monastery. The word Dogen uses, bukke. And have been six temple administrators. But is Buddha and K is family or house. And next sentence said, they are all Buddha's children. Those six temple administrators refer to, let me first write in Japanese. Tsu-su kan-su fu-su tenzo ino. One, two, three, four, five. Oh, shisui. Tsu-su kan-su fu-su tenzo ino shisui. Those are, in this translation, temple administrators. Those are the people who work on administration of the Buddhist monastery. And probably, as I said last time, Buddhist monastery has basically two sections. One, this is Buddha Hall, usually Buddha Hall in the innermost of the Buddhist temple. This is usually this is south, and this is north. And Buddha Hall, all the buildings is built facing south to get sunlight. And this is Dharma Hall. And this is Sangha Hall. Another word is Monk's Hall. And this side is called Queen. And in the Sangha Hall, monks, training monks, is training monks sleep, eat, and practice meditation. And this queen is the building or buildings in which temple offices and kitchens, or those buildings or department for administrations. So this is west side, and this is east side of the temple ground. And people who stay in the Sangha Hall focus on practice zazen or meditation and studying Dharma. And people belongs to this side work for various departments. And there are six or many more positions of administration. And in the early stage of Zen history, that means when the monastery is not so big and simple, people practice in the Sangha Hall and people work in the office take turn in during each practice period. So one time if a monk practice in here, and next time he work here. and support each other. That is a basic system of Zen or Zen monastery in China and Japan also. So they practice Dharma, and of course they need some people who support the practice, and they take turn each other. That is a basic structure of Zen community. And this Tenzo is one of the six major officers. And originally those first three are just one position named Kannin. This Kan and In, that means director or administrative director, which oversee all administrative activities. But because you know the monastery you know became bigger and bigger, and you know in the Song Dynasty some monastery had several hundred or even more than 1,000 monks, so four position couldn't you know take care of all the affairs. So the position of director was divided into three. And this Tusu is like a general director. This person has overall responsibility about all the administrative aspect of monastery. And Kansu is an assistant director. This person assists the general director. And Fusu is like a treasurer. The person takes care of financial aspect. And Tenzo is cook, so Tenzo is in charge of, you know, part of this queen. Is kitchen, and Tenzo oversees the making meals. And Ino is a person who is in charge to oversee the activities of the monks, not only in the monks hall, but also monks who are working in this side also. And Shisui, usually in English we call this a work leader. Shisui takes care of construction or maintenance or repair of the buildings and all other works. And all the monks do some work that is called samu. What is samu in English? Community work. So one of the characteristics of Zen monastic practice is monks try to support the practice and the working to support the practice was considered as a very important part of the practice. It's not simply work that is necessary to continue the practice, to support the practice, but all different kind of work or jobs itself is an essential part of Zen practice. That is the characteristic of Zen practice. Traditionally, or in Indian Buddhist Sangha or monastery, monks didn't work. They focus on meditation and studying Dharma. And their food donated. I mean, they practice begging, walking to the town or village and receive food, and they eat once or twice a day before noon. So they maybe they did like a cleaning, temple cleaning or those light work. But in Chinese, the monastery, the monks even started to do farming to produce their food. And that was prohibited in Vinaya. So in India, farming was not practiced by monks. But in Zen monastery in China, they started to do farming also to support their practice. And those different work became the important part of, or as I said, essential part of Zen practice. That is what this first and second sentence means. You know, in Buddha's family, or Bukke, or Buddha's Buddhist community, there have been six temporal administrators, and they are all Buddha's children. Buddha's children is a translation of Bushi. Butsu, and Shi means child. And Buddha's children refer to Bodhisattva. Bodhisattva is a Buddha's children. Very immature stage as a Buddhist practitioner, but we are children. So when we grow and mature, sometime in the future, we will be Buddha. And also, Buddha's family means Buddha is like a father, and all the monks or practitioners are children. And that idea is pretty much Chinese. You know, in China, you know, family system is a very important foundation of Chinese society. So in Buddhist monastery, Buddha is father, and all the monks are like a Buddha's children. Or sometimes the abbot is like a father, and people practicing in that monastery are like children of the abbot. That kind of, not a fake family system, or fake, I don't know. No, it's fake is not a good word. Fat is a good word. It's a kind of imitation, not imitation, but you know, this is not real family, but it's like a reflection of, you know, Chinese idea of, you know, family. I don't know the right word.
It's modeled after the Chinese.
Yeah, yeah. Analogous. I don't know the word.
Yeah.
That sound okay? Okay, thank you. Analogous.
And also the monks left home, so they sense...
Yeah, important point is for Chinese people, Chinese Buddhist, you know, one of the, probably I already said, but one of the difficulty Chinese people had to accept Buddhism was Buddhism destroyed the family value. That is the basis of Chinese ethics or morality. But one of the kind of excuse, maybe excuse is not a good word, you know, Chinese Buddhist used is, this is another kind of family. So they left the, real family, but this is another kind of a larger family. So they don't, Chinese Buddhism is not Buddhism did not negate or destroy the family value. That is what they want to show to the people in the society. And as so they tell the people that Buddhism is worth to support, and it's not a dangerous cult for common people in the society. That is the why they use like Buddha's family and Buddha's children. So Buddhas and Buddha's children are together, they carry out Buddha's work. So Buddha's family has its own family business, and all people, carry out that family business. And what the family business is for Buddhists is, in the Lotus Sutra, it said all Buddhas appeared in this world to show the true reality of all beings and to allow all beings understand, comprehend the reality of all beings. That means awaken to the reality of all beings and enter to the reality of all beings. He said that is one great matter of all Buddhas. That is Buddha's business, or Buddhist family business, is to awaken to this reality of all beings. That is what I always, saying as a Shōhōji Sō, to awaken to that Shōhōji Sō and live based on that awakening to the reality of all beings. That is family business of, Buddha. So all these people working to support the practice in the Sangha hall is not something less important and yet necessary. But these are all of them are Buddha's children and carry out Buddha's work. So their job, their work as administrators are Buddha's work. Usually we think, practice meditation and studying Buddhist text and listen to that about our teacher's Dharma talk is practice. But, cleaning the temple buildings or cooking or all other, necessary work is necessary but not so important. But that was different in the Zen monastery. All those works are also essential part of Zen practice. And that was I think surprise for Dogen when he went to China. In Japanese Buddhist monastery until the time of Dogen, the structure of Buddhist order is same structure as mundane world. People from the upper class became upper class monks in the hierarchy of Buddhist order, and people from the middle class family automatically become middle class monks, and people from low class family became low class monks, and those low class monks did those such works, like cooking or chopping wood, carrying water, and temple cleaning. Those things are done by low-class monks, and not only workers, but also in the Japanese, big Japanese Buddhist monastery at the time of Dogen had soldiers. So Buddhist monastery is not only a religious or spiritual place, community, but also a political, economical, and military. They had military power also. And I think because Dogen was from very one of the highest class, aristocrat in Kyoto. It said Dogen's father was the secretary of the emperor, and Dogen's mother's father was prime minister. So Dogen was really from a high class family. So I think Dogen never did such, you know, physical work, like a cooking. So the reason why he went to China was to study the essence of Zen and the Zen practice and study Zen teachings. I didn't think Dogen understood the importance of those works. And when he went to China, he was 23 years old. He was very young, and he was looking for the true teaching of Buddha. And right after he arrived in China, even he was staying in the ship, the first Chinese monk Dogen met was a Tenzo. And he had a chance to have a conversation with this Chinese monk. That encounter was one of the reasons or motivation he wrote this text, Tenzo Kyokun, as a most essential teaching of Zen practice. And the Tenzo he met came from the monastery to buy mushroom from Japan to make some feast for the next day. But Dogen want to have conversation with this person because this was the first Chinese Zen monk Dogen met. But Tenzo said, "I don't have time to talk with you. I have to go back to, you know, make preparation for the next day's feast." Then Dogen asked, "Why do you cook? Why, you know, the job to cook is so important? You know, you look very old and dignified person, respectable person. Why do you, you know, work such a thing? What is a good point of, you know, cooking or doing shopping?" And he, the Tenzo, the old Tenzo, you know, laughed at Dogen and said, "You are a good boy from the foreign country, but you don't understand, you know, Buddhist teaching at all." So Dogen was really, you know, ashamed, and he asked, "Then what is first he said, "Why don't you focus on practice and study? Practice is bendo and study is the meaning of the words. What is the words? Why don't meaning of study means in the case of Zen, you know, studying like a koan stories and working with the koan. But the Tenzo said you don't understand the meaning of practice and studying Dharma at all. So he was ashamed and he asked them, what is practice and what is the meaning of words? And the Tenzo said, don't stumble on your question, then you will be a good practitioner. That means don't escape from that question. Facing that question by yourself and go continue to practice, then you will see it. And that was only thing that Tenzo said, and he left. So I think for Dogen it was really a surprise and almost shocked. So he was how can I say? He thought he found there's something he didn't know about this Zen practice, beside, you know, practice meditation and studying Buddhist and Zen teachings by reading sutras or koan stories. There is another very important part of Zen practice, and that is this, you know, spirit of monastic practice or community practice, you know, to support that study and practice meditation is also important part of practice. Those three are three pillars of Zen practice, you know, studying Dharma, practice Zazen, and community work. Those are three most important part of practice. And I think when Dogen received Dharma transmission, he lived in China for 5 years and received transmission from his teacher and went back to Japan. And this was written a few years after he founded his own monastery in Japan named Koshoji. So I think when he founded his own monastery, he wanted to introduce this spirit that, you know, not only meditation and studying are important, but also community practice. I mean, community work is really important. Not to support the practice, but working itself is Dharma. And itself is practice. And that is what he wants to write in this text. And in this text, he used the work of Tenzo as an example of such a community work. There are many other different kinds of work, but this is, in here, he used the example of Tenzo because that was one of the most kind of a strong influence he received from Chinese monks. From the very beginning, he arrived to China. So he introduced very, you know, briefly introduced this spirit of Zen practice. And next he said, among these six administrators, Tenzo, or chief cook, has the job of taking care of the preparation of food for the community. So this is a definition of Tenzo's work. And the Zennen Shingi says, for serving the community, there is the Tenzo. This word serving is a translation of Kuyo. who is to offer, and yo is to nurture. So making offering and nurture the Buddha's seeds or Buddhist practice. Of course, the physical energy is offered through the meals. But this kuyo has much more broader meaning. When not only the tenzo prepare meals for the practitioners, but when in India monks did begging, and lay people offer the food, that this kind of offering was also called kuyo. So this is another name of dana paramita, offering or making donation. And not only that, as broader meaning, this kuyo is not only about food, offering food to the monks or practitioners, but in the sutras it says, for example, our zazen is kuyo or offering to Buddha, our practice, and also not only sitting practice, but also like chanting sutras is an offering to the Buddha, or like playing some kind of music to praise the virtue of Buddha. That is also a kind of offering. So all our practice, Buddhist practice, is in a sense kuyo, offering. So by studying and practicing Buddhism, we make offering and nurture the Dharma. So make offering and nurture the Dharma is the meaning of their work. Especially in the Tenzo, among all the different kind of offering, the Tenzo's offering is to prepare meals to the monks, and of course, food is one of the most important things to maintain or support our life. Tenzo is, of course, one of the very important practice. So, since ancient times, it says, Zennen Shingi says, this Zennen Shingi, as I showed last time, this is a translation of Zennen Shingi, and I introduced what this book is last time. And if you are interested in those, structure of Chinese Zen monastic practice, it might be interesting to read this book. This is a translation of Zennen Shingi. Zennen Shingi is a regulation within Zen monastery, and this was made in 1104, so about 100 years before Dogen. So this was made in China. Chinese monastic regulations, so it's not so interesting. But if you are interested in that kind of social aspect or community, as a community, it might be interesting. It's within this book, not only those six positions, but there are many other positions to support the monasteries. And they explain what each person in each position should do. Please.
May I ask a question now, or should I wait?
You can, please.
I find this, it's interesting, and of course, to a certain degree, I've heard it before on a different level.
Mm.
But there really strikes me as being something kind of romantic about the whole thing.
Romantic?
Yeah, and according to McGray, at least through the song, there weren't distinct Zen monasteries, that most of the larger monasteries had a variety of teachings,
mm-hmm.
and no one would have said that's a Zen monastery. So
mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if these officers were found in other monasteries as well. And also, you know, it seems that in China, lower class people did sort of wind up scrubbing the floor in Chinese monasteries. So were they really structured so differently, do you think, that Dogen was really shocked at the differences?
I think it was true Dogen was shocked. Such an eminent monks, respectable monks, was you know folk dedicate themselves in working. Like it said, it takes about 4 and 5 hours to from his monastery to the port, and he probably walked and walked back. So it was a hard work. And of course, Dogen found another side of the monastery, and he, as John McRae said, you know, the monastery, especially in Song China, is already not so different from Japanese Buddhist monasteries. It's a establishment and supported by emperors and government and aristocrats. So one of the things Dogen criticized the condition of Chinese monastery at that time was abbots didn't come to Zendo to practice with monks. Abbots are almost always associated with those people from high class, you know, government officials and rich people. That was another point Dogen disappointed. But he admired, he encountered some of the monks he really deeply admired, like people who were from a very rich family in China. But he was wearing a paper clothing, paper robe. And Dogen asked, why, you know, you are from a rich family, why you wearing such a, you know, what do you call?
Cheap.
Not cheap, less, worse than cheap.
humble.
Maybe lower than humble. So people ask why you put such a, you know, strange thing. whenever he moved, he made noise. So Dogen asked, why do you wear such a terrible clothing, robes? And even though you are from such a rich family, and the monk said, because I became a monk. That kind of spirit, please.
He was the monk who copied down his teacher's Dharma talks on his paper robe because his teacher forbade in secret.
I don't know. I never heard of it. Is that a Zen story? I don't know. Anyway, there are several monks Dogen met in Chinese monastery, and they were very sincere. Another example was another Tenzo he met at Mount Tianton, the old Tenzo, who was drying mushroom in the fen. It was very hot, but he did it by himself. That kind of how can I say, sincere practice. So it's a kind of, you know, romantic or idea about Zen, a spirit of Zen practice. But I think when he founded his monastery, he wanted to establish such a community, not, you know, like a same kind of hierarchy with the mundane world, but he wanted to create a community where only people who are, that is the next thing I'm going to talk, who allows body mind came, and the those community members support each other to practice. It might be romantic, but probably he, Dogen was romanticist. He wanted to really create such a community. I think for that he, you know, left Kyoto, left and went to a very deep mountains. Even if it's small, he wanted to have such a place to people can practice with genuine spirit. Okay. Yeah, this is not a lecture, but a study group, so you can give me any question anytime, because this is ongoing study group, so I don't need to finish, you know, sometime. Please.
In this hierarchy, in this structure,
mm-hmm.
What's the abbot?
Abbot? Abbot quarter is by the Buddha hall, and especially Dogen said abbot should, you know, practice and educate monks. Abbot should not, you know, so much involved in this side, mm-hmm. in administration.
So the abbot is not in those six?
No. Though, no, abbot is beyond those six.
But the abbot was, to a certain degree, a political position.
Yes, especially in the Song dynasty, you know, big monasteries. Okay. So, since ancient times, masters with way-seeking mind, lofty people who had awakened their heart, were pointed to this job. Of course, not only Tenzo, but all people who practice and worked on these six administrators, Dogen said, are people who aroused way-seeking mind or body mind, or body citta. Body is awakening and citta is mind. And another one is awakened their hearts. This bodhicitta is a translation of do-shin in do is way and shin is mind. And Chinese expression do-shin is a translation of Sanskrit word bodhicitta. Transliteration is bodhisin. Bodhi Shin. Bodhi is a transliteration of body, and they translate only this part, citta, to mind. And this expression, awakened their heart, is a translation of Hoshin. And there is a monastery in Japan, that name is Hoshinji. This is this Hoshin. And also, I think, city center of San Francisco Zen Center is a Hoshinji, right? That means beginner's temple, beginner's mind temple. This Hoshin is an abbreviation of Hotsu Bodai Shin. Arousing body, mind is Hoshin. So this translation, awakened their hearts, is the people who aroused body, mind. So first one and second one, way-seeking mind, and awakened their hearts is the same thing. Both means people who aroused body, mind.
Of Dogen to sort of think that way about the history of practice. I mean, it's hard to believe that it was true, of course, but then if he wants it to be true, I think is interesting and speaks of his spirit, as you were saying, and why he would leave Kyoto and try to start fresh with people of true sincerity.
And this is really important point of the teaching in Tenzo Kyokun. As I said, you know, we study Tenzo Kyokun as a text or a teaching of Jijyu Zammai in our daily lives. And this Hotsu Bodai Shin is a key of this, you know, practice in our daily activities as a Jijyu Zammai. You know, when he discussed about Zazen practice as Jijyu Zammai, he said, when we sit, we, you know, display the Buddha Mudra with our whole body and mind, then this entire universe become enlightenment, and each and every beings started to reveal their own Buddha nature. And this, all beings within this entire universe influence this person sitting. So the person sitting and all beings are working with each other. And this entire universe, including this person sitting, become the world of so-called awakening. That is what Jijyu Zammai means in Dogen's description in Bendowa. And I think same thing, Dogen wants to say the same thing. When, for example, in the case of Tenzo, you know, Tenzo, the kitchen is the Dharma world for the Tenzo. And if Tenzo person work with this body mind, bodhicitta, that means way seeking mind, and also awakening mind. With this mind, you know, all things in the kitchen, Tenzo needs to work together, like a stove and firewood, water and food ingredient. All these things are part of his practice, and this practice allow this person to awake to the nature of each and every beings, and together, you know, express the Buddha's life. That is what I think. That is what he want to teach in Tenzo Kyokun. So the person who is working and things around him are one thing, and we actively do something with those things, and those things influence us and allow us to wake up, awake to the true nature of each and every beings. That is us, you know, true reality of all beings. And that is not the observation, but that is working. So the person, that's why Dogen said, when Tenzo person is washing rice with water, he said, the Tenzo should see the water as his life. And the pot he was cooking is his head. So this is part of these things, you know, that Tenzo person is working with is part of his life. And that is the fact Uchiyamoroshi, you know, tried to say when he says, like, everything we encounter is our life. That is the main thing in his book, in his commentary on Tenzo Kyokun. Everything we encounter is our life. So our life is not only this side, this part, but this entire situation is our life. And we, Tenzo and all other things in the kitchen, and if they have some co-workers, you know, this is one world of Tenzo. And as a Tenzo practice, how to be connected with all things in this world, and reveals the Dharma nature. So, you know, as he's going to mention, Tenzo's work in the 13th century was really hard. It's not, they didn't have electricity, and they didn't have, you know, still water, and they didn't have refrigerator. You know, I had experience of, you know, cooking with firewood and cooking with, you know, gas or electric stove is completely different experience. Really.
So scary.
At Antaiji, I cook with firewood, and at Varazend also I did. We cooked only with firewood. Because at Varazend we only had 3 people, even during session we had less than 10. So cooking was not so difficult. But at Antaiji, especially a few years before Uchiyamoroshi retired, we had about 30 people. And to, you know, prepare meals for 30 people with firewood is really difficult. You know, we need to cook rice, and at the same time we need to do soup, to make soup, and one side dish, and we need to make hot water. So at least 1, 2, 3, 4 stoves, 4 fires. And if the fire is too strong, the rice is burned. And if too weak, you know, rice is not cooked. Either way, we couldn't eat. Please.
Well,
Were you cooking on an open fire or on a wood stove?
Kind of a stove. It's like a, it's a, how can I say? The stove at Antaichi had, you know, one, I thought there was three. So here is a, in a hole, and we make fire here, and we put a pot on here.
That's not what I visualized, because we have American wood stoves that are...
It's very different.
Sophisticated, maybe.
Yeah, this is not sophisticated at all. So we have to be really alert. I think three was not enough, so we had another one, four. And we have to be attentive to all the fires. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you know, we mess up. So cooking with firewood is really a practice of mindfulness. And not only focus on one thing, but four things at the same time. It's really difficult, but really good practice of, you know, focusing on one thing, concentration. So during cooking those things, we cannot think about something else. We have to be really there. Please.
I say this not, hopefully not out of selfishness, but as appreciation of a modern-day Tenzo. I called on Taiji a couple of weeks ago, and I think it was around 11 a.m. there, and Jikai, who's the guest manager, answered the phone, or I asked for her, and she spoke to me very calmly and pleasant, but then she said, you know, I'm Tenzo today, I'm cooking, and there's a lot going on. And she was still very, like, patient and accommodating, and spoke for a few minutes more, although I'm sure...
I'm sorry for her, but fortunately we didn't have telephone at Antaichi. Yeah, it's... please...
Today I was making lunch for Shoju, and I was making just one pot of something on the electric stove.
Uh-huh.
And at a certain point, I asked Shoju, I said, "Can you take care of the salad? Because I can't concentrate on anything else except for this." The idea of doing all of that is so mind-boggling. It is just—it's terrifying.
Yeah, really. Please.
I was just thinking, you know, maybe this is a little bit of my own romantic nature, but I'm wondering, you know, Dogen had a very, very privileged upbringing.
Mm.
And I would imagine it's probably pretty unlikely that he ever had anything to do with a kitchen or with cooking.
I don't think so. I don't think he has any experience of cooking or tenzo.
So, you know,
because when he, right after he went back to Japan, he became the abbot. Right away. So he didn't have a chance to practice as Tenzo, and yet he wrote very beautiful teaching about cooking.
Yeah. Well, what I'm thinking is, you know, it's sort of similar, it's not exactly similar, but sort of similar to the Buddha seeing the state of the world outside of the privileged upbringing that he had and being so moved by that. And I'm thinking that the way Dogen writes about the Tenzo is very much part of the Japanese character to see the sublime in very simple everyday activities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think especially since he wasn't raised amongst those things, he might be more likely to kind of turn them into poetry in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like he does here.
Yeah. Yeah, his teaching, you know, this is a part of Ehe Shingi, and Shingi means regulations. So this is a part of his regulations, but it's not like regulations. It's really very much, you know, spiritual teaching and very political, practical, and yet very much, you know, spiritual and deep spiritual teaching. He used the example, you know, real, actual, concrete day-to-day activity, but still he is expressing the practice same profundity with our Zazen. So it's really amazing teaching to me. Please.
The emphasis seems to be that, you know, in terms of that teaching, that you are not separate, regardless of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That to be aware of wherever you are,
mm-hmm.
that you are not separate from that.
Right. You know, before start cooking, we have to think, you know, what we are going to make. So that is a different point between cooking and Zazen. So we have to, decide everything and order of doing things. And there are certain fixed order to make Japanese dishes. For example, to make a miso soup, miso should be put at the final stage. And when miso is cooked, overcooked, it doesn't taste good. So miso should be put right before serving. But so until then, the soup should be keep, boiling. So the timing is really important. So the order of doing things should be really clearly understood in our mind. And, what ingredient we have and what is the order of, doing things. Everything should be really clearly thought and make plan. But once we start to cook, we have to forget all those things and just work for 1 hour, 2 hours. So it's like playing music. Before start to playing, I think we have to think. But after, once we musicians start to play, you cannot think, just do. And that is Tendo's work is the same thing, I think. So there is a concentration, and also mindfulness, practice of mindfulness, and being one. There's no separation between the fire or water and the food and the person cooking. Really, one thing. So when it's done and it's carried to the dining room, we are really exhausted. Really exhausted, not only physically, but mentally. So this Tenzo is really a good practice. Of course, when we use gas or electric stove, it's easier, but I think basically the same practice. So I think important point is in Tenzo Kyokun is this Bodhisin or Bodhicitta. So that's why a few sentences later he said, if you do not have the mind of the way, then all of this hard work is meaningless and not beneficial. So this awakening mind or bodhicitta is really key of this teaching. So we need to keep this bodhicitta or bodhisin, working. So I'd like to, we have 20 more minutes, I'd like to discuss what is this bodhicitta or bodhisin is in Dogen's teaching. I think bodhicitta, body mind, in Dogen teaching has at least three aspects. First one is a bodhicitta. Dogen discussed in the first section of Gakudo Yojinshu. Gakudo Yojinshu, or the point to watch in practicing the way, is a part of this book, Dogen Zen. And Gakudo Yojinshu is a collection of 10 independent, very short essays about what we should be careful when we practice. And the very first one of these 10 essays is about the necessity of arousing body-mind. Necessity of arousing body-mind. And here Dogen said, though there are many names to imply body-mind, they all refer to the one mind. So there are many names on this one mind. And this here Dogen says, the ancestor Nagarjuna said that the mind that thoroughly sees the impermanence of this world of constant appearance and disappearance is also called body-mind. So mind which sees the impermanence of all beings is body-mind. So seeing impermanence is the first aspect of body-mind. Dogen said this seeing impermanence is important because, he continued, truly, when you see impermanence, egocentric mind does not arise. When we see impermanence, egocentric mind does not arise. Neither does desire for fame and profit. Out of fear of time slipping away too swiftly, practice the way as if you are trying to extinguish a fire enveloping your head. When we have fire on our head, you know, without hesitation or without stopping everything else, but try to extinguish the fire on our head. And he said, when we really see impermanence of all beings, impermanent, there's no time to waste because it's not certain we have next day or even next moment. So we should be really free, deep, right now, right here, with whole energy, full energy. That is one of the meanings of body-mind. Because of, you know, seeing because we see impermanence, we understand there's no time to waste. So we put our entire energy into right now, right here, what we are doing. That is one aspect of bodhicitta. You have something to say?
Yeah. This seems to tie in with the impermanence. What seems to require impermanence is self. That things have a self, that we have a self.
Mm-hmm.
And that impermanence is without self.
Yes.
And if it is without self, then there is no I that's even here at this moment. It's just a complete continuity.
Yeah, not so. Because of impermanence, and impermanence means no self or egolessness. So in the case of Tenzo, the person Tenzo and the fire and other things working together, that is samadhi. You know, it's not a matter of I use these things or I deal those things, but this person and those things working together seamlessly. That is samadhi. And that is possible by seeing impermanence and egolessness. Okay? Please.
I was just wondering what the character Dogen uses for intimate or intimacy.
Shinsetsu kana? Shin is to be intimate. And set is, what is set? Really, really intimate. And this sin, another meaning of this sin is parent.
Parent.
Parent or family. Intimate. I think.
Okay, you're finished with that.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I was thinking the mind that thoroughly sees the impermanence of all things.
Of course, the impermanence of ourselves.
Ourselves, yeah. Dogen speaks about this as if these officers in the Tenzo were somebody who has this mind. But it's like, as I try to think about that, I think you can't, like, have this mind in a permanent kind of way, can you?
Pardon me?
You can't just kind of like have this mind and it keeps going and never goes away? Or can you once you've seen it?
Well,
I make statements, but it's like...
Well, Dogen said we have to arouse body-mind billions of times.
Mm-hmm.
That,
okay,
that means
yeah.
Each moment. So body-mind itself is impermanent.
Yeah, that's
so we have to return each
yeah.
moment. It's not something permanent.
Thank you.
And second aspect of body mind in Dogen's teaching is mentioned in Shobo Genzo entitled Hotsu Bodai Shin, arousing body mind. That is the word I wrote before. And here, Dogen's, in this chapter of Shobo Gendo, he discussed about this bodhicitta, or body-mind. And he said, to arouse body-mind is to vow to save others before oneself, and to actually work to fulfill the vow. This is body-mind. So the first one is like a wisdom, seeing the impermanence and seeing the emptiness and egolessness. And second aspect of bodhicitta or body mind is having compassion to all beings. And third aspect of bodhicitta, Dogen mentions in Chijishingi. Chijishingi is a part of this book, the regulation or pure standards for the temple administrators. Protect and esteem their great way. Of course, this way, capital W way, Dao, yes. Therefore, having abundant fame and gain, so to practice the way, practitioner have abundant fame and gain, the personal benefit, and departed your homeland. Become monk means to depart your homeland, and consider gold as excrement, consider gold or wealth as excrement, and honor as spittle, S-P-I-T-T-L-E, spittle, and without obscuring the truth, without obscuring the truth or obeying falsehoods, maintained the regulations of right and wrong, and entrust everything to the guidelines for conduct. Guidelines for conduct is what is written in this regulation or shingi. And he said, after all, not to sell cheaply, not to sell cheaply or debase the worth of the ordinary tea and rice of the Buddha ancestors' house is exactly the mind of the way. So he said, after all, not to sell cheaply or debase the worth of the ordinary tea and rice. Does it make sense? Ordinary tea and rice means the tea we drink every day and the rice, you know, we eat every day. So this means that our practice, everyday practice, everyday ordinary practice, there's nothing special. But sometimes, you know, we try to sell, you know, this practice as a so-called Zen teaching, or Zen meditation, or Zen cooking, or something like that, and try to sell it. So our practice, our day-to-day very ordinary things, nothing special, and somehow we want to make this a kind of a sellable commercial goods. And not to do that is, according to Dogen, bodhicitta. So this is a mind which value the tradition of Buddhas and ancestors as a day-to-day, very down-to-earth practice, nothing special. That is, so just do it, you know. With us saying we are practicing something special or something important or some kind of, you know, important thing. Please.
But isn't the other side of that also implied here, that the ordinary tea and rice is exalted?
Exalted. Yeah, more important than gold.
The phrase sell cheaply, I heard two parts of that, and you talked. I want to check out what's actually in the original. There was not selling it, like not, you know, putting it on the marketplace. And the cheaply or debasing, it sounds like there's also not undervaluing it. But is that part of what he said, or is it really just about not turning it into something commercial?
I think, you know, Fat Dogen want to say this is priceless.
Right.
Even no matter how, you know, expensive, how high the price is, if we make put a price, then we make it cheap. I think that is what he's saying.
Okay, so along with being nothing special, there's the
price. There's no, as Dogen said in Jiju Zanmai, you know, there's no way to measure the virtue of Zazen even using Buddha's wisdom. I think he's saying the same thing about our day-to-day practice. There's no way to evaluate. And, you know, sell it. Please.
Well, I think it's also an urge to practice, because to sell something cheaply means to give it up at less than its value. So to not practice the Buddha way and instead to be a merchant or to be a politician is actually taking this ordinary tea and rice and not improving on your position, but in fact losing by selling it cheaply.
Like yeah.
Missing the true value
right.
in seeking fame and profit.
Yeah, so many things become a kind of a commercial goods, especially in this modern times. Even Zen become or spiritual practice is something like a commercial goods. And there are so many, you know, advertisements on the magazines. I think when I read this kind of, you know, things by Dogen, you know, I not only in this country but in Japan also, you know, that kind of what is this means, you know, and some people say, you know, in modern society even the spiritual practice is a kind of an industry. That is a problem.
The ultimate good that we have is time,
mm-hmm.
and that can't be sold.
Right, and our life,
which
our life,
what
yeah.
I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, yes. So, what Dogen want to say is, you know, the most precious thing is our life, our time, together with all beings. Right, please.
One of the classic phrases is avoid picking and choosing,
mm-hmm.
avoid making value judgments.
Mm-hmm.
Although Dogen's not directly saying that, I have a sense that he's pointing at that, that something is high, something is low, something is valuable, something is not valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems to be pointing to that process of making valuations
right.
as being un-Bodhi-mind.
Mm-hmm. So he wants to say, you know, our life is beyond any this value judgment. So we cannot and we should not sell it, making it a commercial goods. But, you know, we have to make, you know, our life as a kind of a commercial goods. We have to sell our time, energy to make some income. So I wonder, if, you know, I'm practicing here, but I'm a employee of some office, and I receive income, so that means I sell my part of my time and my life to get to exchange the money. So in that sense, what I'm doing and what he is saying here is a kind of different. So I need to think of it, think about it.
I need to think about it a lot more.
So I think this is a, you know, great teaching, but this teaching should be a kind of a mirror to reflect our life, how we live now, how we, you know, and how we live and how we are, you know, doing with our own life. Please.
This afternoon or this morning at work practice, I was just for a little while helping Shoju, you know, with the planting of the tomatoes and putting the tomato cages around. There was something so utterly simple about that. That, you know, all the stuff you're talking about in terms of the income and all that, it just evaporated. And what we were doing was just, you know, she was digging the hole and planting, and I was going to put the cage on. And it was just very peaceful. It was just doing that. You know, that was great.
Yeah, that kind of work is really great. But when I started to think how I can sell certain things in the highest price, then we have to kind of make something false. Something to show, you know, this thing more than its own value. I think
isn't part of this. Isn't, it seems to me part of the not good part of this is you have to separation. You have to.
Right.
I mean, how can we do that? I mean, how can you be one with something and then you can't do it? You can't do it. So it's counter to practice.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just. And Dogen always seems to be, you know, stopping us from. You're putting it away.
Yes.
You're separating yourself from that. And, and somebody at this is vaguely, I guess. Related. Somebody I read was asked, some teacher, what was the most valuable thing in the world? And it was, it had to do with this wordplay and stuff. He thought, I mean, he said the head of a dead cat.
Head of the dead cat?
Yeah. Because it was priceless.
Or the air, you know. Air is priceless, but without air we cannot live. Even
right.
No, one moment.
And I think parks, you know, they're so useless, but in a way they're the part of the city that's worth, I mean, it's where everyone goes to refresh themselves and you don't have to buy, you're not assailed by, you know, I mean, it's just a rejuvenation public.
Okay, it's already 8:35. Well, the rest of this paragraph, what he's saying is the same, continue to say the same thing, and finally, in the last sentence he said, therefore, isn't the Tenzo different from both usual worldly cooks and even the imperial cooks? He kind of compare Tenzo's work and those so-called like professional cooks' work. When Uchiyama Roshi wrote some commentary on this sentence, kind of a union of the professional cooks in Japan complained. But I mean, that, you know, professional cook is, you know, making, cooking for money. I think that's the point, for sale. Mm-hmm. So make the food and cooking as a commercial good.
Yeah. Well, it's nice when you're born to a really rich family, you don't have to do that.
Right.
That's not on Ryokan's list, is it?
No.
Yeah,
Ryokan didn't like food prepared by professional cook. And poems written by professional poet. Okay, any questions? No. Okay, thank you.